in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we start a new edition of the Rucka Debrief. Writer Greg Rucka is back to talk to us about lots of information. In part one, we'll be talking about Blackest Night Wonder Woman, his return to the character, and all the big news that's going on with Batwoman and Detective Comics. Today's issue, 860, is the last issue for Greg and J.H. Williams. That doesn't mean the team is done with the character. Apparently, there are new plans in the works to put them both on a new Batwoman monthly title. Greg talks about his future plans with Batwoman and Detective, and gives us more on the details of working with J.H. Williams and Nicola Scott. The conversation begins with a look at Blackest Night, Wonder Woman. Let's start with the most current couple that came out. Last week, Blackest Night, Wonder Woman came out, first chapter.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see, I think it's a good solution having you write this arc. And also, you know, focusing on going back to your run on Wonder Woman and that key moment with Max Lord. And that way it doesn't really interrupt the story that Gail is telling either.
You've hit the two reasons for doing it right on the head. The first is that I absolutely didn't want to interfere or contradict anything that Gail was doing. You know, that the story needed to fit in Blackest Night. And for that reason, absolutely could not be permitted, in my opinion, to interfere with what Gail was doing. I really didn't want to do that to her. That was priority one. And then priority two is, you know, I mean, Jeff said, I want you to write this. I'm pretty good in support. You know, I'm good on bass. You don't want me, I think, too much on lead guitar, except on occasion, you know what I mean? And Jeff, you know, Jeff is playing lead. So it was, again, very crucial before even starting it. He, you know, because, well, you know the story about how this came about, right?
Tell me.
He had said, well, I want you to do this. And I'd been like, well, okay, I'll see. You know, I don't know my schedule, blah, 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 blah. San Diego this year, he announces it.
Okay.
He's doing the Blackest Night panel with, like, you know, Ivan and I guess Eddie. And he's up there and he says, Greg Rucka is going to do Blackest Night Wonder Woman. And then he comes down. I'm signing in D.C. And he walks over with this great big shit-eating grin on his face. He's like, gotcha! Now you got to do it. And I was like, oh, you suck, man. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is I'd have done it anyway, you know, but Jeff knows. Jeff is very good at pushing the right buttons with me.
Okay.
So, but agreeing to do it and then knowing what was required are two different things. And that was the next conversation. And Jeff and Eddie Braganza and Adam Schlagman and I had several conversations, and it really was. I mean, I went into it, and I still am in it as far as I'm concerned, with the attitude this miniseries needs to serve Diana in the context of what Jeff requires for Blackest Night. It's got to be in support of that. And he is doing some things with Diana in Blackest Night that have not yet reached the comic store that have provided some very interesting challenges. So we'll see. We'll see what the ultimate result is. Nicola, you know, I mean, I've wanted to work with Nicola Scott for, I don't know, 5 years now. So
yes,
simply getting to do this with her has been a treat. And then the opportunity, you know, I love writing Diana. It's something that I enjoy, and I always try to do well by her. With the, you know, with the proviso, or I guess with the qualification that, you know, obviously what I think is well by her and what, oh, I guess fans think is well by her may be wildly divergent. And I saw that there was some heat, you know, the Arlington sequence. I understand that somebody was telling me that there was somebody who was posting it at the DC Messenger boards who was very, very offended that we had done anything at Arlington. No, you know,
okay.
Yes, the immediate defensive response is to sort of snort, but
just did.
I actually don't think that I understand. I mean, I really do understand. And the thing, the only response I can add to that is, yes, that is precisely why these bad guys do this horrible thing. You know, they're trying to evoke a response from Diana, and they go after something that is sacred.
Absolutely. They're willing to go that far. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, I tried to write it with the acknowledgement that this is sacred. There is an element here of a sin beyond the pale. Issue two is, you know, and the thing is, issue two and issue three are very different issues because they don't track a direct continuity. What they are moments in Blackest Night. So Jeff has written some key material with Diana in the main series and then sort of hands over and says, okay, between this moment and this moment, you know, is what we want from the issue. So trying to make those moments, you know, work, and also trying to make then something that has a three-issue, I don't want to say direct continuity, but a thread, you know, that draws it together, that's been the biggest challenge.
Sure.
But I do go on. I will stop now.
No, this is, I think people want to hear this kind of explanation because, as you say, there are, you know, it is in support of a bigger event. And so, you know, you do have to kind of serve both masters in terms of still telling a compelling story, but, you know, go this far and no farther.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that, and I'm sure people are interested to hear the balancing act. And also, regarding Arlington, beyond just the obvious of some of these soldiers, I don't want to tip it, but there's a good cameo in here of a favorite DC character that I enjoyed seeing happen. Further, I also think the... you know, at this point in the story, I think it's hammered through that as offended as this person was that Arlington Cemetery was a locale, it's not these people. They are constructs. And I really think that that's been pretty hammered home, you know, in the course of this story. So, you know, I think some people are just unfortunately easy to offend. But you take him seriously, and I think that's great, and that's fine.
It's that desire of, you know, I've been spending a lot of time amongst the military, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. You know, really, really, it has been very present in the work lately.
Certainly.
And so wanting to, you know, really, really wanting to respect and not fetishize, but to respect the sacrifice and honor that that is of great matter to me. I want to do right. So hopefully, you know, hopefully it executes. And like I said, I can understand why somebody would be offended. I think one can come up with any number of analogs, you know, if this scene had been set in X instead and the same thing had happened. If, for instance, I had set it at Auschwitz.
Sure.
You know, so.
Sure.
There we go. But enough of that.
Enough of that. Well, a question about this Wonder Woman series. You know, much like the Superman Blackest Night series, we saw a lot of supporting characters of Superman in that story. And Donna has her own little crisis going in the midst of Blackest Night. Will that be followed as well in this arc?
Diana encounters Donna in a way. I hate it when I have to do this.
That's fine.
I hate that. I hate that sort of...
You could say Donna's involved, you know.
Well, both Donna and Cassie appear in issue two, but I don't think in ways that people think. Issue two, I will say right now, is incredibly subjective. It is the most subjective issue.
Okay.
And yes, I recognize that's painfully vague. But again, taking a page from the Jeff Johns School of Storytelling, I ain't giving nothing away.
So. No problem. And it's three issues?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And like you said, glad that you had the chance to work with Nicola. I know that Gail keeps her busy.
Yeah, we've actually joked about that. This is sort of element of going, okay, I'm going to wrest you away from Gail for these three issues, and that's good. It like I said, I've been wanting to work with Nicola for a very long time, and she loves the character so much. You know,
pretty obvious,
yeah. Yeah, and we've actually had a fair number of stories sort of. Conferences via Skype because, you know, I'll leave the conversations with Eddie and Adam and Jeff and then, you know, she and I will try to coordinate and I'll say, okay, well, this is what we're looking at for this issue. It is the fallout of working with J.H. Williams, which is I now really, really want to mind the artist, you know, and go to them and say, okay, what's the visual you're seeing here? How are we going to make this work?
That's got to obviously improve your storytelling and reach that point where you're having those kinds of conversations with the artist more.
Yeah, I actually don't understand. I'm kind of bewildered that for a guy who has always acknowledged the collaborative nature of this medium, it's taken me so long to actually actively embrace the collaboration. I really don't know what I had been waiting for. I feel kind of foolish. But I do think that it shows. I think there is a dramatic change, you know, when you are working hand in glove with an artist as opposed to just sending them the script and then getting comments from them and working backwards like that. I think scripting in advance it has obvious benefits. And I think that's nowhere more apparent than in Detective right now. And also, frankly, working with Cully on the Question co-feature there, it has reaped some dividends that I think are going to become more obvious in 860. The 860 backup, I have to wash my mouth out with soap. I mean, the 860 co-feature was very much written, you know, after talking with Cully substantially about, okay, these are the 10 pages, how are we going to do this? So hopefully people like the work. Hopefully it shows up.
That's cool. Now, before I leave Wonder Woman, one last thought is, given the confines of the story, you know, are you able to find, you know, other things that you've wanted to say about Wonder Woman? I know that you left the book, but weren't through with the character, at least in your mind, or, you know, it was okay to put it down there, but...
I was nowhere near finished, and to be honest, you know, it's kind of a yes and no answer.
Uh-huh.
There are elements that are in the miniseries that touch on some of the things that I feel were left hanging, but as I said, this is in service to a different story, and my primary obligation is to serve that story, so... You know, and also, as much as I feel I left things unfinished in my run, that was several years ago. Gail, you know, is has her hand on the tiller,
sure,
and is guiding the ship quite well. So, you know, I have really no urge to. There's a difference between continuity and dredging up the past, should I say.
I understand.
And Blackest Night Wonder Woman is not the place to dredge up the past. Let's leave it
okay.
at that.
Okay. Well, I guess, and maybe I'm just reading in your subtext based on your previous stories, because I don't think anything that you've written contradicts what Gail is doing now. And I understand that she is, you know, the master of Wonder Woman right now and is, you know, deciding the course. But... yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, I see, you know, as room for both. I mean, as different shades of the same character, and that there is consistency, if not, you know, in tandem thinking about where Diane is.
Yeah, I absolutely think that there's certainly a consistency between Diane as written Black and White Wonder Woman and Diane as I wrote her when I was writing the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that anything there is in contradiction to what Gail has been doing.
Right.
And perhaps I misunderstand the question, but it's, you know, it just, this wouldn't have been the place for me to go, here is where I will answer those things that I had to leave dangling. That wasn't the purpose. The purpose here was to, you know, honor and service Blackest Night, and that has to be the priority. Because people are ideally picking this up because it's part of that, not because they're hoping it's Greg's going to, you know, go and play with the ideas that he had left unfinished. Some of it's there. Clearly, you know, Diana's stance towards Max
exactly
is a clarifying stance. And it was important, and it was actually something that Jeff said. He said I don't want to see remorse when she faces Max. And it was Jeff who said it's got to be Max. Max is there. You can't do this and not use Max. And I agree. And it was also important to me. You know, I mean, the thing is, there's this open wound, you know, as far as I'm concerned, in the character's character, which is that the sacrifice story was never adequately answered. And it was never adequately answered because of an editorial decision. There was an editorial decision, you know, when I left the book, and it was being relaunched. It was time for new material. And that was seen as an old story.
Interesting. Okay.
But the problem is, still the same character. So it's a delicate line, you know. It's a delicate line because the fans, you know, who have been paying attention, they know what happened. And I know that for several of them, this is still, you know, for some of them, it's a problem. I was at this show. I was down in Melbourne and in Auckland for the Armageddon Expo. And I did a couple panels with Peter David. And at the very first panel, somebody had asked some question about continuity in characters and how we use them, right? And Peter made a comment as to the effect that, you know, Wonder Woman doesn't kill. You don't do this. So what I'm sitting there, I say, you know, I'm the guy who wrote that story. And he had that moment of like, oh, that was you. Yeah, that actually was me. But there's, how to put this, there's nothing, I don't disagree with him saying that. I understand him saying that. It's not enough to have told the story. There needs to be more told about it. And so, yeah, to me, that is still unresolved and will be unresolved for, you know, God knows how much longer. And I think eventually it will end up going the way that many stories do, which is it will fade in the midst of time.
Oh, I hope not, man.
We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, I just always found beyond the story itself, your discussions about the story and where it was in panels at conventions afterwards, I just think, yeah, there's a lot of subtext to be explored there, and I hope it doesn't go away, and I hope that things like Blackest Night, you know, keep it the bear in the room, that at some point you're going to have to, that someone's going to have to address, and I hope it's you. But that's one man's thought.
I appreciate that. At the same time, though, I have to say, I think it's unfair, for instance, to put that on. So this becomes the catch-22. I agree there is a story that needs to be told there. That is not a hard sell, right? I am with you. But at the same time, it is certainly not Gail's obligation, for instance, to answer it.
I understand. Right? Sure.
So if the story remains, you know, needing to be answered, well, then we're in this place of, okay, when do you do it? How do you do it? And I don't know actually what the answer to that question is, honestly. I don't know where that opportunity lies. So maybe, you know, maybe somewhere on the horizon.
All right. Well, and you mentioned obviously that the military is on your mind of late. And
yes, I wonder why.
Gee.
As you segue into the other book. Yes.
And continuing to be the tour de force that it started out to be, man. I mean, it's nice to see that once again, You on Detective is a book that I think a lot of people look forward to monthly. And as this story unfolds of Kate Kane, and also of Renee Montoya as the Question. And I always got to put that on there. And eventually I want to talk, too, about what's coming up in the Blackest Night Question issue, obviously.
But yeah, first, well, we should talk about that.
Oh, yeah. But first, let's talk about Kate Kane and her origin story, which has been really interesting to read and to see because, once again, you know, J.H. adopting all these different styles.
It's amazing, isn't it? I think it's just... I get those pages, and I mean, the emails at this point are just so repetitious to him, because he'll send the pages, you know, and I know what he's going to draw in as much as he's described what he's thinking, and, you know, I've sent him the script, and we've talked about it at length, and then I get the art, and he gets the same email, you know, which begins, oh, my God, you know, how do you keep doing this, I say to him, and he shrugs and smiles politely, you know, and continues on his merry way. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he does it. I really don't. I'm working with the guy, and it's alchemy. You know, he's got some mysterious process.
Well, and it's fun to see, even within a specific scene, two different styles clashing, because I really felt, watching Kate's dad in a lot of those scenes, I felt a Joe Kubert kind of style. It wasn't a Kubert ripoff, but it definitely evoked that kind of style.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. Yeah,
and I really thought that at that one moment in 858, when you know, the incident happens at home, or wherever they're staying, I guess, and the kidnappers.
The abduction.
Yeah, the abduction, exactly. And then suddenly to see this Joe Kubert figure interrupt this other world that Kate is, you know, the world of Kate and, you know, and Alice and their mom all together. That's pretty cool.
You know, it's most artists seem contented to have a style, you know, and they'll stick with it for an issue. And some artists will mix up the style over the course of the issue. And I've never encountered a guy who's like, you know what I'll do? I'm going to use four separate styles over the course of this issue, and two of them will be on the same page. And it's like, what are you on, dude? You know, it's funny too because I really think, before H58 came out, Jim and I had been talking, and he was nervous that people were going to reject the style shift, that we had so communicated a certain style in those first four issues that we were going to lose them with the shift. And I was like, no, we're not. Trust me. We will not. They will ooh and ah and cut calves in your honor, and, you know, there will be burnt offerings and things like that. And, I mean, really. And I think, frankly, I was right.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the first time I saw those things, it was like, what? It's like he's channeling, you know, Mazzucchelli meets Toth in this bizarre fusion, you know, as birthed by Kubert. It's just stunning to me. I think it's just amazing.
Well, and also the intrusion, and I mean, to rescue them from the abduction, her father comes in, and there is this moment of a Kubert figure disrupting this world. And also, it helps, you know, Kate kind of processing everything that's going on at that moment too, and the conflict and the loss of the security that she had, and, you know, just all the emotions are being played out, both, you know, as you've written it, and also, you know, JH's art really does kind of hits it home.
That last page of 858, I think, is a remarkable page. The three panels as you zoom in on, you know, this 12-year-old girl and her eyes, and, you know, there's no question looking at her. This is never going away.
Yep.
And it is that sort of, it's a very active decision, you know, this need to, look, you do not put on the bat unless you have some deep-seated formative tragedy. And it was, I think, important to all of us involved that, yeah, you need to see that it is, in fact, a hell of a tragedy.
And shifting to 859, now we, you know, get further into her career, and certainly we understand why she joined the military. And, oh, by the way, and I don't mean to dismiss this either, it was interesting, too, to see that their mom was a military woman as well. And that would make sense, I guess, given how driven the father was, that it would be someone in the military that he gravitates to for a wife.
Yeah, mom was in intel, in combat intel. So, but we did both Jim and I did an awful lot of research. You know, the script for 859, I'm trying to figure out a good way to describe this. Normally, you know, I'll finish a script. The script is going to be about, I don't know, maybe 200, 250 kilobytes, right, for a 44-page document.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I know we're talking. It's like I'm providing a recipe. It's not,
yeah, quantify it.
I'm trying to provide a context. And the script for 859 in particular, with all the reference, was over 10.5 megs, with just all the reference embedded. It was like, this is what the costumes look like. This is what the uniforms look like. This is the locations. Trying to get things as accurate as possible at every turn. So it's probably anal.
Well, it's cool. No, and it's and again, we get further on her career, and now we see why the military, you know, didn't work out for her, and we get a little aimless Kate that whose life, you know, comes into focus by the end of 859, and or at least on its way.
Yeah,
and.
No.
Yeah, and explaining some of the relationships along the way as well. We see Renee, of course, and also you know, I guess the, and you know, if it's already been kind of shown in early issues, I'm going to have to double back. But learning more, too, about Kate's dad's second wife.
Yeah, Catherine is slowly coming into focus. She suffers from, how to put it, she suffers from being the one that the book is not about. So she actually has an interesting moment in 860, which I think can be read one of two ways. You can read it very superficially, but, you know, for people who are reading closely, I would hope that they acknowledge, like, Jake is a good guy. And he's not going to marry a wealthy heiress for the cash. That's just not his thing.
That's where I was kind of going, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there's something clearly very sincere in their relationship. And, you know, Jake waits, you know, it's over 10 years before he remarries.
Right.
But, you know, Catherine is uncomfortable with Kate, and a lot of the reason she's uncomfortable with Kate is that Kate is not really nice to her. Kate, you're not my mom. The shorthand is, you're not my mom.
Right.
For justified or not. And she has an interesting, like I said, there's an interesting moment where Jake and Kate see each other. For the first time in a while, in 860, and Catherine is there, and her comment at their reunion, her dialogue at the reunion is, you can read it as dismissive, but speaking as the guy who wrote it, it's actually very jealous, and it's not you know, sinisterly, overtly. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha, jealous, as much as I am jealous of your relationship. I wish I could have that closeness.
Kate is jealous of Catherine, or Catherine is jealous of
Catherine? No, Catherine.
I understand.
Catherine is jealous of their interaction.
I understand, okay. And again, much like Kate's relationship, how much her mother was the anchor and was there for them, she and Alice, when her dad couldn't be. It'd be fun to see it explored.
Yeah. I'm hoping the legs we've provided, you know, that they stand.
Cool, man. Well, and learning, you know, Montoya's relationship more with Kate, you know, comes clearer.
Yeah, and the thing is, that I told people how did they meet. I was like, she pulled it over for speeding, and I don't think people believed me. But I was like, yeah, no, that was how they met, you know. the biggest, we've been, you know, avoiding the use of captions, and I think that 859 would have benefited from a caption between their meeting and the next scene. You know, it's like, you know, 8 months later or whatnot, because clearly they've been seeing each other for a while at that point.
Sure.
So the scenes don't follow immediately upon one another. But there was, I think, some confusion for some readers going, wait a minute.
That never happens except for in Penthouse Forum letters.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, no. That's not the kind of relationship it is. So.
But I think very quickly, too, through some fast visuals, you're able to show her aimlessness before she has her mugging incident in the alley.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, you know, again, you know, good shortcut storytelling that informs exactly what we need to know in a very economical way.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, again, you know, Jim and I, to repeat myself, we spend a lot of time talking about what's going to happen and how to affect the visuals. And we had talked about that double page that leads to the meeting. And the way Jim had described it to me and then what he did with it visually were actually two different things. I had thought he was going to end up going a different way. And, of course, it was like reading, when I first saw that page, it was like looking at one of the, you know, Engelhart Rogers pages, where, you know, when you knew that the artists were working on great big boards so that they could do those wonderful pages where you would have, like, a 10-panel page, and then panel 5 would be, in and of itself, like another comic book page. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
You would look at that center panel, and you would realize, wait a minute, that's not a panel. That's a page done as a panel. And he evoked that. And I actually haven't asked him about it, but I suspect it was also quite deliberate that, you know, he's sort of touching on you know, as Kate is moving through, he's touching on different eras.
Well, I'm getting, I think, more comfortable with the idea of getting in touch with Jim and finally having him on, because...
You really should. I've got to say, I mean, he's just, you know, if you can't tell from the art, the guy's just dangerously smart.
Well, yeah.
So I think that it's...
I never doubt the guest, man. It's always, am I prepared to have a good conversation with him? And I think, honestly, reading Detective now... And you know, because I'll be honest, I haven't gotten a Promethea yet. And so that's why, while I'm well aware of his ability and have certainly looked through it and, you know, mouth open and amazed, this is really... And I did, the one issue of Promethea I did read was the last issue, which I had to because I heard it was such an interesting experience, regardless of the series, and appreciated it for what it was. But that's why it's been... You know, hey man, they gave you a great partner in this, and honestly, I think his strength comes through, and your strength is coming through. I think this is really, you know, going to be one of these stories that I think you will be remembered fondly for.
I hope we both will be when all is said and done.
There you go, man.
You know, the goal is to have created a run here that will, you know, that will serve the character down the line and will provide for her some longevity. As for Promethea, I will say, you know, he's been working on the design elements for the Absolute Promethea that DC's coming out with. So you need not wait too much longer, actually, before you can have beautiful, beautiful versions in your hand.
Oh, that's cool. So this is your first collaboration with James?
Yeah. Jim and I had not, you know, we hadn't even spoken to each other, I think, before Pete Tomasi put us together initially.
Right. Okay. And we talked about that in our first conversation about this series, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I suppose actually now I should say so. There has been 860 is actually Jim's and my last issue on Detective together, and then 861, 862, 863. Jock is handling the art.
Wow. Okay.
And
cool.
It looks quite lovely.
Yeah, boy, yeah, and, exactly. There's no slouch. Fantastic.
No, not at all. And then Jim and I are. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but we're starting work on what will be a Batwoman title. Our initial plan had been, you know, 12 issues on Detective, and for a variety of reasons in-house, we're going to take our last story, or our last part of the story, because Jim and I have pretty much looked at those 12 issues as a they are a complete 12 issues.
Yes, okay.
Though they do break. They break, I think, easily into segments. So the last five parts will be told later in 2010.
Interesting.
And actually, we'll do a different story for the issue one because I want to write a good issue one by the same, you know, and frankly, Jim wants to draw a good issue one. We want to do an issue that will allow people who haven't read Detective to come in blind and you know, be satisfied. So that's the big plan right now.
Okay, and then we'll...
And you heard it here first, actually. This has not been announced anywhere.
Will you then, after the Jock issues, be leaving Detective as well?
I don't know. There is some discussion as to whether or not I should stick around and write somebody else in a bat costume.
I see.
But of course, the sneak there, and as Dan put it to me, he said, so would you be interested? And I was like, you know, I'd be interested. But, you know, don't be foolish. If you give me Detective and you think Kate's not going to be in it, you're daft. You know, I mean, you're just, you ain't thinking, dude. I mean, so we'll have to work out those details. It's still up in the air, and a lot of it depends on my other commitments right now. There's been a fair amount of... activity outside of comics that is taking my time right now, and if that continues in the direction it's going, I may find myself having to pick and choose what I'm working on very carefully.
I understand. Okay.
Regardless, the question co-feature is going to continue.
The question co-feature is what?
It will continue.
Okay. Very good. And before I get to that, now, so those two issues by Jock, will they be Kate's stories as well then, Batwoman stories?
Yeah, no, the three issues, and actually, okay. it's actually a bit of a shuck and jive. It starts looking very much like, okay, we play with the presumption that, okay, it's Batwoman and Detective Comics, but it is actually Kate in the present following the events of 860, pursuing an investigation that is directly related to a Batman investigation about year two. And it's a the investigation is non-continuity. If people were to go and go, okay, wait a minute, I'm looking through old Batman Year 2 stories, they're not going to find this.
Okay.
But the idea is that she finds herself sort of unintentionally, following in Batman's footsteps. And it is kind of the evolution of this particular antagonist over that period, I guess I should say. It's weird. I have to talk around it because I don't want to give it away. Obviously.
I understand.
But yeah, there's a connection there. So ironically, Jock is not only drawing Batwoman, but yes, he's also drawing Batman. Because we jump back and forth in time over the course of the story.
Cool. Well, that's great. Well, it sounds very interesting. It sounds like there'll be some interesting announcements coming in the future of Detective, and we'll wait with bated breath.
Yeah, now everybody who's listening has to pretend that I didn't say anything about it and act surprised when the announcement is made. and that way Dan, who is going to be in Portland next week, will not kick my ass into next month. So
I can't use this as like part of the written part of the newsorama?
This will be the teaser.
All right. Wait, what the hell did you do? Come on. Christ, I go to the West Coast to relax.
That's not a bad Dan, John. That's kind of scary. You been working on that?
Oh, yeah. There's video of me hassling him with Jan and others at conventions. And he's like, oh, yeah, great. It's you. Okay. Go ahead. Get it over with.
We need to do a Dan DiDio roast at, like, San Diego or something.
Oh, I'd gladly.
That's what our industry needs. More roasts.
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. Jesus. Yeah, Jeff Ross has really made quite a industry out of the roast these days.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought when we were kids with Dean Martin and stuff where this shit would go?
I know. I actually was kind of surprised that as a form, it has returned. You know? It was like, is this something we really needed to bring back? I'm just curious.
Have you heard, and to stay on roast for a second, have you ever heard like some of those real classic ones when they weren't doing it for cable cameras or network cameras?
Yeah.
They're great.
The ones that were, I guess for lack of a better phrase, done, I don't want to say out of love, but certainly with the affection of just doing it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very different beast now that they do it in front of, you know, cameras.
Absolutely, man. Well, yeah, and also just so funny, as opposed to, you know, name any comedian of the week that you want on there from Patton Oswalt on, who I like, but it's just funnier hearing George Burns be dirty, or Edgar Bergen. Edgar Bergen, for God's sake, and Charlie McCarthy, you know.
Yeah, it's all the stuff that they dare not say when they knew people were listening, because there was image to maintain. Yeah, absolutely.
Too funny, man.
We'll pause there for part one. So much still on the table to talk about. We've got the question feature in Detective Comics with Cully Hamner. Also, the upcoming Blackest Night question issue that Greg will be co-writing with Denny O'Neill. And Dennis Cowan drawing that issue. Everyone's excited about that, including Greg. We talk a lot about the question in the next episode of the Rucka Debrief. In addition to that, you'll be hearing about Stumptown, the Oni Press comic series that just started. A wonderful full-color series with Greg and Matt Selworth. We talk all about it. In addition to that, of course, Greg's work on the Superman titles. All covered in part two of the Rucka Debrief. Don't worry, part two is coming tomorrow, so we promise to get it all in for you right before the Christmas rush, and also promise more episodes through Christmas weekend right here on Word Balloon. I'm going to be stretching my muscles and showing you some of the other skills that we've got in the bag. Plus, even though next week is a skip week, don't worry, Word Balloon has you covered. Good episodes coming on the way, and we're going to do what we can to fill in the gap of no comics next week, plenty of comics podcasts, at least right here from wordballoon.com. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you to come to wordballoon.com, where you'll find my archive of episodes and an occasional thought or two on my mind. We've also got some film clips over there as well, video clips, interviews, and fun things that I've found that I think you'll enjoy. A good look at the Chicago comic scene from a local standpoint. I've always got my camera with me, and I'm trying to let you in on this comic scene in Chicago as it unfurls in front of me. Make sure you look for us here on newsarama.com as well.
And find us on iTunes if you'd like to leave a review or give us a rating. That would be terrific. Any questions or comments about the show, visit me at wordballoon.com. Come to our message board, or you can email me, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter, John Wordballoon, or on Facebook at John Sundress. Okay? Until next time, thanks for listening. Merry Christmas. Enjoy yourself this holiday season. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.